6. At 11 o'clock on that bright and sunny Tuesday morning, Holly sat on a shady bench in Andrew Dean Park, sipping a latte from a nearby Starbucks and thinking about her queer interview with Mrs. Kelly. The woman hadn't known Terry was dead. Probably none of the Heisman staff knew, and that didn't surprise Holly very much. The murders of Frank Peterson and Terry Maitland had happened in a small city hundreds of miles away. If it had made the national news at all during a week when an ISIL sympathizer had shot 8 people in a Tennessee shopping mall and a tornado had leveled a small Indiana town, it would only have been as a blip far down on Huffington Post, there and gone. And it wasn't as if Marcy Maitland would have been in touch with her father-in-law to tell him the sad news. Why would she, considering the man's condition? "Are you a reporter?" Mrs. Kelly had asked. "We've had quite enough of your kind." All right. Reporters had come to call, also the police, and Mrs. Kelly, as the out front person at the Heisman Memory Unit, had had to put up with them. But their questions hadn't been about Terry Maitland, or she would have known he was dead. So what had been the great big fracking deal? Holly set her coffee aside, took her iPad from her shoulder bag, powered it up, and verified that she had 5 bars, which would save her from having to go back to the Starbucks. She paid a small fee to access the archives of the local paper, duly noting it for her expense report, and began her search on April 19th, the day Merlin Cassidy had dumped the van. Also the day it had almost certainly been re-stolen. She went through the local news carefully and found nothing relating to the memory unit. That was true for the following 5 days as well, although there was plenty of other news. Car crashes, 2 home invasions, a nightclub fire, an explosion at a gas station, an embezzlement scandal involving a school department official, a manhunt for 2 missing sisters, White from nearby Trotwood, a police officer accused of shooting an unarmed teenager, Black, a synagogue defaced with a swastika. Then, on April 25th, the front page headline screamed that Amber and Jolene Howard, the missing Trotwood girls, had been found dead and mutilated in a ravine not far from their home. An unnamed police source said, "Those little girls were subjected to acts of unbelievable savagery." And yes, both girls had been sexually molested. Terry Maitland had been in Dayton on April 25th. Of course, he had been with his family, but there were no new developments on the 26th of April, the day Terry Maitland had visited his father for the last time, and nothing on the 27th, the day the Maitland family had flown home to Flint City. Then on Saturday, the 28th, the police announced that they were questioning a person of interest. 2 days later, the person of interest was arrested. His name was Heath Holmes. He was 34 years of age, a Dayton resident who was employed as an orderly at the Heisman Memory Unit. Holly picked up her latte, drank half of it in large gulps, then stared off into the shadowy depths of the park with wide eyes. She checked her Fitbit. Her pulse was galloping along at 110 beats a minute, and it wasn't just caffeine pushing it. She went back to the Daily News archives, scrolling through May and into June, following the thread of the story. Unlike Terry Maitland, Heath Holmes had survived his arraignment, but very much like Terry, Jeannie Anderson would have called it a confluence, he would never be tried for the murders of Amber and Jolene Howard. He had committed suicide in Montgomery County Jail on June 7th. She checked her Fitbit again and saw her pulse was now up to 120. She chugged down the rest of her latte anyway, living dangerously. "Bill, I wish you were on this with me. I wish that," so much. And Jerome, him too. The three of us would have grabbed the reins and ridden this pony until it stopped running. But Bill was dead. Jerome was in Ireland, and she wouldn't get any closer to figuring this out than she already was, at least not on her own. But that didn't mean she was done in Dayton. No, not quite. She went back to her hotel room, ordered a sandwich from room service, damn the expense, and opened her laptop. She added what she now knew to the notes she had taken during her telephone conversation with Alec Pelly. She stared at the screen, and as she scrolled back and forth, an old saying of her mother's popped into her head. Macy's doesn't tell Gimbel's. The police in Dayton didn't know about Frank Peterson's murder, and the police in Flint City didn't know about the murders of the Howard sisters. Why would they? The killings had taken place in different regions of the country and months apart. No one knew that Terry Maitland had been in both places, and no one knew about the connection to the Heisman Memory Unit. Every case had an information highway running through it, and this one was washed out in at least two places. "But I know," Holly said. "At least some of it. I do. Only..." The knock at the door made her jump. She let in the room service waiter, signed the check, added a 10% tip after making sure a service gratuity was not included, and hustled him out. Then she paced the room, munching away at a BLT she hardly tasted. What didn't she know that could be known? She was bothered, almost haunted, by the idea that the puzzle she was trying to work had missing pieces. Not because Alec Pelly had purposely held things back. She didn't think that at all. But possibly because there was information, vital information, that he considered unimportant. She supposed she could call Mrs. Maitland. Only the woman would cry and be all sad, and Holly wouldn't know how to comfort her. She never did. Once, not so long ago, she had helped Jerome Robinson's sister through a bad patch, but as a rule, she was terrible at things like that. Plus, the poor woman's mind would be fogged by her grief, and she also might neglect important facts, those little things that could make a whole picture out of the fragments, like the three or four jigsaw pieces that always seemed to fall off the table and onto the floor, and you couldn't see the whole picture until you hunted around and found them. The person most apt to know all the details, the small ones as well as the big ones, was the detective who had done most of the witness interviews and arrested Maitland. After working with Bill Hodges, Holly believed in police detectives. Not all of them were good, to be sure. She'd had little respect for Isabel Janes, Pete Huntley's partner, after Bill had retired from the force. And this one, Ralph Anderson, had made a bad mistake by arresting Maitland in a public place. A bad choice didn't necessarily make him a bad detective, though. And Pelly had explained the crucial mitigating circumstance. Terry Maitland had been in close contact with Anderson's son. Certainly the interviews Anderson had done seemed thorough enough. She thought he was the one most likely to have any missing pieces. It was something to think about. In the meantime, a return visit to the Heisman Memory Unit was in order.